netcasts you hate.
From people you despise. These are dorks.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
Well, it is over a week since the Macworld started, and I'm kind of Macworld expoed out. I don't know about you, Chad.
Well, I never went, so I had no chance.
We're going to have a little bit of a roundtable discussion about the Macworld Expo. Joining us on the show today is Guy Searle.
Yes, Tom Servo here.
And Bill Palmer from iProm.
You know, before we get started, I got to address something real quick. Something disturbing happened last week. I know there's a lot of rumors. The rumors are true. Coach Carson Palmer, quarterback, Cincinnati Bengals, did cease and desist me over the use of the name Palmer, but I told him that not until he gets out of the first round of the playoffs.
So you should be safe for at least another decade and a half.
He also said I have to stop using the name Carson. I didn't really understand that.
Carson Palmer.
My follow-up jokes are
Now, is there any truth to the rumor that you've registered the site iProne?
iPhone.
You know.
I'm just real glad I got that letter from Apple stating that they have no issue with the name iProne now. I'll put it that way.
This year, unlike last year, it seems like Macworld Expo was a little bit more Mac, a little bit less iPod. But I think iPod was represented really good. I did want to get Bill Palmer's thoughts and ideas on what the Macworld Expo meant to the iPod crowd. Good show for you guys?
Oh, just fantastic. I mean, the difference between last year and this year, just from the standpoint of our publication, was like night and day.
Now, you are the iPod guy, but you're also a Mac user, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think about the, you know, there really wasn't anything to buy for the Macs at the show, or for an iPod for that matter. There was really no compelling reason to go to the Apple store as soon as the Steve Jobs keynote was over. Did that kind of surprise you?
Yeah, and it didn't take, it took a minute for that to sink in afterwards. I said, you know, okay, well, I guess it's time to go shopping. And I thought, you know, with the exception of the two products they pre-announced, if you strip that away, Steve actually announced almost literally nothing at all, which was kind of surprising.
Now, your site's been covering the iPods for over 3 years now, isn't it? Or is it, this is your three-year anniversary, correct?
Right, yeah, this month is our third birthday.
Happy
and
birthday
that's iProm
to
Radio.
You. And iProm.com.
Yep.
Yes.
So, what's the iPhone going to do for your coverage? Is that just are you just going to kind of fold the iPhone coverage into iProm, or are you going to stick with just iPod? Because the iPhone is an iPod.
Right. The iPhone has every bit of functionality that the iPod has, so we're just going to treat it as if it's another iPod from our coverage standpoint. But obviously it's a lot more than just a new iPod.
Now, the iPod is getting a little long in the tooth. The last major revision has been a year ago, and even that really wasn't a major revision. Do you see a new iPod coming out soon, too?
I think they have to, because I think the features they've showed off, especially the on-screen stuff and all these different features, if the fifth-generation iPod looked long in the tooth before, it looks completely obsolete now. So
well,
I think just to protect themselves.
Do you think it's going to have the same form factor as the iPhone?
I guess that depends on how close they are to having those features ready to market. Steve Jobs said it's going to take them 6 months to get approval. They may also be 6 months away from being able to put that touchscreen stuff on the market. So if they're going to rev the video iPod in a month or two, you know, they would have to have that technology ready to go.
Well, do you think that if they do keep the same form factor that they'll stick with flash memory, or do you think they'll stick a hard drive in it?
For the iPhone?
Yeah, no. For the new
iPod.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on capacity. There are an awful lot of people out there who really do want 30 or 60 gigabytes worth of space or 80 or whatever it is now, because they can't get off that thing where they want all their music all the time. And so until we see flash get to probably 32, 64, 128, which I think is a year or two away, I think we're still going to see a hard drive of some kind in the largest iPod.
Well, especially if the device is going to do video, which takes up a heck of a lot more room than audio does, you're going to need more storage than 4 to 8 gigs.
You know, the iPhone has been early reports are saying that the OS, the Mac OS on the iPhone, is weighing in at around 500 megabytes, which means if you get a 4 gigabyte iPhone,
right.
really you're only getting a 3.5 gigabyte iPhone at that point, because the OS is taking up mm-hmm. you know, a good chunk of that space.
Yeah, this is less than a nano in terms of capacity, which is really kind of surprising when you look at it right. that way.
I really don't know if Apple can squeeze a hard drive into that. I mean, that is a really, really slim device. And even the small hard drives, boy, you're just going to need more space than that, thickness-wise, I would imagine.
Yeah, because... Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say, there's a lot more packed into an iPhone than there is in an iPod. So even though the thing's about as big as a video iPod, the memory component there's got to be a lot smaller than the video iPod's hard drive.
So do you think with macOS running on the next version of the iPod, and we're assuming, because, you know, we could be completely wrong, the iPod could continue, version 6 of the iPod could be very similar to what we have now. I think that would probably be a huge mistake
yep.
on mm-hmm. Apple's part. But, I'm bumping the mic there. That's got to sound good. If they go ahead and use this form factor, macOS is running the iPod software at this point. It is the iPod. What new features in a iPod-centric phone? So take out the phone aspect, take out the camera. It's just an iPod. What else could they do with the iPod OS that would be really cool? Let's start with Guy. What do you think would really be cool about an iPod running Mac OS?
I'd like to see keep the microphone, keep the camera. You know, maybe even turn it into a 15 frame a second little video camera.
Why?
Well, it's one less device that, you know, people on the go might want to take with them. And if it's already there, then, you know, why not just leave it there?
How about you, Bill? What would you like to see the iPod kind of grow into with Mac OS at its core?
Actually, you know, I've got something of a different take on this, and it's probably ironic for me, of all people, to say this since I run a quote-unquote iPod site, but I think the iPod is dead. I think Apple just killed it. I think it's dead in 5 years. I think
agree.
Now we see Apple's plan for the past 2.5 years was to, work on this phone. I think they're going to come out and say, replace your iPod with an iPhone. And if they wanted to keep milking the iPod name, they would have called this the iPod phone. They could have got away with that and spent a lot less on the legal fees with Cisco. So I think the iPhone is the new iPod, and I think people who don't even want the phone are probably still going to buy an iPhone and just ignore the cell phone functionality further down the road.
Yeah, but I think that would really cannibalize their own market. I mean, mm-hmm. why would Apple... If somebody just wants a music player and they want an iPod, are they still going to have the iPod Nano then? And then the iPhone is the new full-size iPod? I can't imagine Apple would... Not everybody's going to switch to singular. Not everybody's going to want to pony up $500, $600 for just a music player if they don't want the phone instead. Or as well, I should mm-hmm. say.
Well, remember that Singular only has, I think it's a 2-year deal, and after that, Apple's probably free to market the phone to any provider that's out there.
Can Apple really wait 2 years to revise the current generation of iPods? There's no way.
I don't think so.
I mean, already you look at the iPhone, and the iPod looks like a clunky piece of crap next to it. You're like, ugh. Mm-hmm. You know, not to mention how clunky your cell phones all look now.
Yeah.
I mean, I almost can't stand to use my phone. I'm almost embarrassed. I'm like, man, I really want that. I don't know if I'm going to buy one. I don't know if I can justify it with my wife to buy one. But I want one.
But if they took out the phone features and knocked it down to $399 for the new iPod.
I could do that.
Yeah, I would prefer that myself.
I think what we have to keep in mind here is that the iPhone is very much a first-generation device, and mm-hmm. they're going into a market where they have 0% market share. And that's, if you look back 5 years, that's exactly what Apple did with the iPod. I mean, it wasn't the first MP3 player. There was a market. They were all crappy. And they came in with this iPod, and I think Apple really wrote the book on how to go from 0% market share to 70% market share in a 5-year plan, and I think they're going to probably try to repeat that 5-year plan. And I think the big differential here is last time, for about the first 2.5 generations, they limited it to just Mac users, gave them a chance to come up with a few revs and get it just the way they wanted it, mass produce it, get the price down, multiple models, and then they threw it out to the wider Windows audience after there had already been this hype around it, and then they just, you know, engulfed it. I think they're going to do the same thing here, but this time they've limited it to singular customers. Gives them a chance to get it right. We're going to be the guinea pigs. And then once they've really got it to like where they had the iPod around the third generation,
they'll throw
that third generation iPhone out to like every carrier out there once the singular exclusive expires.
I don't know if Apple can wait that long, to be honest, though. I think they need market saturation with those devices, especially. They have to keep the iPod sales up. They are not going to cannibalize iPod sales hoping that the iPhone catches on as the new iPod. I just can't see that happening.
Well, not early on. I mean, I'm thinking over the, you know, over the five. Obviously, they're going to keep revving the iPod, and they're going to keep trying to make it better. But I really think over the next 5 years, they're just going to kind of, you know, try to transition more and more people toward the phone. I could be totally wrong. It's hard to look 5 years into the future on anything, but that's just the vibe I get.
Well, I can't see Apple sitting with the same industrial design with the current generation of iPods. I mean, it almost at this point has to go full screen, doesn't it? And it almost has to have touch controls. The next iPod, the actual iPod, not the iPhone.
Well,
the next major version.
I think we've seen
there's the other theory that I'm not sure I buy into it, but the theory is that Apple created all this hype about the pinching and the touchscreen with the iPhone, and then, okay, that's way off down the road, but when they introduce those same features on a video iPod next month, everybody's just going to be all over it because now they can get an iPhone that's not a phone, and they can get it right away, and it only costs $300. So that may be the strategy.
I don't know if it'll be $300. I think, especially for, you know, something with a much bigger screen than iPods have had in the past, that it'll probably be $400 even without.
Are we going to keep some sort of Wi-Fi connection on this thing too?
I think you have to. I really
do the web browsing.
Really think,
that's what I would like to see in the next iPod. Yeah.
I want to be able to sync my music wirelessly. I cannot stand. You're going to have to plug it in to give it power.
Right.
No question. But I so want to be able to simply get near my computer, it pop up and say, would you like to sync with iTunes? Yes, I would. That's what I want.
You're talking about syncing to Apple's iTunes store or as compared to...
No, my library.
Oh,
Same way you sync with your USB cable now. I'd love to see that, even if it's slow, because sometimes you buy one song and you want to sync it, and who cares if it's slower?
Yep, exactly.
Well, do you think that with the Wi-Fi feature that they'll include being able to browse with it? I'm talking about the iPod, not the iPhone.
You mean buy music on the iPod wirelessly and download it?
Right.
Oh, that's definitely in the future.
That's a killer feature.
Well, isn't that functionality already built into the iPhone? Realistically.
Well, it is. Sort of. You know, I mean, if you can go to websites on the iPhone, you know, no reason why you couldn't go to iTunes through the Apple Store.
So wouldn't then the controls of the iPod eventually just kind of morph into its iTunes? It's not an iPod interface? Because let's be honest, that we're using exactly the same interface on our iPods as the very first generation. Yes, it looks better, but it's the same. It performs exactly the same. If you went back 5 years with a current generation iPod and handed it to someone that's using a first generation iPod, they would have zero problem navigating it because it's exactly the same.
Well, why instead of using like what they're using now, you could kind of enhance on that by using something that kind of looks like a Finder window with the what do they call it, columns view.
Well, I'm thinking of that the iPod interface would simply be iTunes. You turn it so you have the portrait view, and it's basically iTunes.
Well, even with the portrait view, you're going to have a little bit of problem, you know, seeing everything that's going to be there on the screen, because it's only a 3.5-inch monitor or a screen.
That's bigger than you think, but they could tweak it a little bit so it looks pretty good.
Well, it makes sense, because the nice thing is that if you had Mac OS X Lite on it, I mean, if you had the iTunes interface, you could make your own playlist on your iPod.
Right. That's interesting. What do you think, Bill?
I think, you know, there's a big question of, you know, are we going to say that they're like, you know, specific applications on the iPhone, is iTunes going to be one of them? You know, and then, I mean, we have Safari, so, you know, is what we interface our music with, is it going to be close enough to iTunes that we can call it iTunes? Steve Jobs didn't refer to the SMS text messaging as iChat, but it's clearly iChat. So, yeah, it's entirely possible that's where they're heading.
Well, I don't think it's iChat, but I do think it's taking the graphical user interface from iChat.
Well, yeah, it's obviously
it's
a different
iChat-ish.
Technology.
Go ahead.
If you buy one of these things and you're using text messaging that looks like iChat, and you're using a web browser that looks like Safari, even if you're a Windows user, aren't you already using a Mac? Doesn't that mean you're already a Mac user?
You know, I was saying this not too long ago. For everybody who buys an iPhone, couldn't they consider that person a switcher? That person just started using a Mac.
No, it's true.
Because
I think so.
They're saying it's Mac OS X on there, mm-hmm. and it is a computer. Make no mistake about it. This is a computer. It's not just a digital Walkman like people like to think of an iPod. Mm-hmm. An iPod is a computer, too. But the iPhone really is, at this point, a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, realistically, do you even need a computer if all you're doing is browsing the net and getting email? Wouldn't this be all you needed?
I'll carry my laptop a lot less when I'm traveling with this phone.
No question. I mean, the only reason I take my laptop half the time when I go to freelance gigs is not to get files off of it, it's to check my regular email, mm-hmm. or if I need to bring up the web for whatever reason, and if my phone does it all, it's going to weigh a whole lot less.
Mm-hmm.
And I would already be doing all that email and stuff with my phone if those interfaces on my phone weren't so crappy to start with.
You could put it in a little gun holster and just pull it out when you need it. Ka-chow!
Let me ask you guys this, since you're the Mac experts here. Now that Apple is giving Windows users Safari on the iPhone, is it time to release Safari for Windows?
No. The only reason that Apple... Number one, a lot of Mac users don't even use Safari. They use Firefox. Firefox really is becoming the dominant browser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or Opera.
Maybe among geeks like us, though. But, I mean, when I go out, like, people's mothers and stuff, like, they don't even... If they're a Mac
user,
they don't
know what
Firefox
people's mothers.
Is.
It's Safari.
Yeah, it's about your mother. It's all about your mother.
Why would a Windows user even want to use Safari? What's the benefit?
The same way that they're... Well, I think once they have the phone and just the identification, and they're using iTunes on their PC, and they like that, and you could argue that that's caused them to want to go out and buy a Mac because they can get a bunch of other apps that are like iTunes that are just as easy.
Well, one reason I can think of that they might want to use Safari on a PC if they had an iPhone would be to sync bookmarks, things along those lines.
That was one of my questions. Can you use your iPhone to sync with your Mac? So you'd have the same bookmarks, so you have all your contacts. Everything would be the same from your Mac or PC to your iPhone. I mean,
I would assume so.
He never really showcased that.
Well, they may still be working on that. Now, am I correct in that iSync is already out for Windows?
I don't know, to be honest.
I know Bonjour is.
Bonjour. Well, that's an open source technology, though. That's not an Apple-specific technology. Apple adopted that.
Yeah, but they market it.
Well, sure, but you know they were the first company to market USB, too, but that doesn't mean they own it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a Mac-specific technology. But,
right,
I don't know.
Couldn't they just use iTunes to... They're using iTunes for everything else on Windows. Couldn't iTunes be your syncing software with your iPhone? For your internet bookmarks?
Oh, I think it will be.
I think it will be. Yeah. I think that's exactly what they're doing. You know, who would have thought, going back not very long ago, that iTunes really would be the center of Apple's entire digital distribution.
Media empire.
You know, it syncs with the iPod. It's going to sync with the iPhone. It's going to communicate with the Apple TV. I mean, iTunes is really going to become, very quickly, within 6 months, probably the most important piece of software you can have on your Mac or PC. Right.
Well, mm-hmm. Have you guys noticed any similarities between like the Apple TV interface and certain segments of iTunes?
Oh,
especially
sure.
with like album flow and things along those lines.
Well, yeah, it looks kind of like a cross between Front Row
and iTunes.
But there was a third party media center type of software.
Klaus Wolf reviewed it.
And
you had
it,
and I watched it and reviewed it, and I can't remember.
You're talking about wasn't that EYE ITV?
No. It wasn't. No, this was media. Chad's going to pull up the computer because that's actually what it reminded me of. It had the same type of interface. But the ITV, you know what ITV really replaces? It replaces the Airport Extreme. You know that the little one, the Airport Extreme.
Extreme.
The AirTunes.
With the AirTunes and all that. That's what this is. It's replacing that completely, but it's allowing you to do video, and it's giving you a user interface for it.
Media Central 2.1.
Yeah.
Media Central 2.
Now, you go look at the screenshots from that application, then go look at the screenshots from the Apple TV, and you're going to see some similarities that I don't think is a mistake. I think Apple likes that. Scrolling down, going to the right, scrolling mm-hmm. down, going to the right type of interface, just like the iPod.
Yeah.
I think they've intentionally made it enough like the iPod that the Windows users will identify with it right out of the box.
Yeah, don't make it too different so that they stay comfortable.
Exactly. Yep.
Speaking of Airport Extreme, one of the things I'd been looking for from the show, and we talked about it, was possibly an Apple network attached storage unit. And I was talking to somebody else, and I was saying, Apple didn't really have much. They had the new 802.11 pre-N Airport Express or Airport Extreme. And he said, well, yeah, but you attach a USB drive to that and use Bonjour, and essentially it becomes an ass.
Maybe.
Becomes an ass?
Yeah.
Who are we talking about here?
This podcast now has an extreme
explicit
label. Yeah. Explicit label.
Great. Now I got to put extreme.
Extremely explicit.
Extremely explicit.
Oh, he likes big butts.
Did you? did you guys happen to look at some of the features of that new wireless router? You can actually set parental controls. You can actually set up so people can access during certain hours of the day, but not later at night.
I haven't really seen it.
Yeah, because everybody's ignoring this thing. I really haven't seen that anywhere, but I thought, because I'm going to want this new router eventually. I don't have a G computer anywhere in the house, but I am going to get the Apple TV eventually. So I was looking at it. It's only $299,
right,
which is still pretty expensive. But some of it's parental controls that you can literally say, okay, let anybody access between, 8 in the morning to 5 at night. Only these people between 5 at night and 9 at night, and nobody after that. I think that's pretty neat.
So it has, password protection and sign-on and all that happy stuff?
Well, yeah, you got that now already. I mean, any wireless router will do that. Mm-hmm. But you can actually have schedules of who can access it and when. And I think that's a fantastic idea. If you've got a teenage son up in his room with a wireless laptop and you don't want him on past 10 o'clock at night, you could simply turn off his access remotely. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to touch his computer. You just say, nobody gets to use this after this certain hour without literally going over and unplugging the router from the wall. I love the idea. I think it's fantastic.
And then iProng is going to make a fortune by selling the hacking code to teenagers for their lunch money.
Absolutely.
We don't call us iProng for nothing.
Yeah,
so where's iProng going in this this new year, Bill? What's going to happen at iProng that we can look forward to?
You want our secrets, don't you?
Other than, maybe wedding plans.
Wedding plans?
Yeah, wedding plans.
What on earth could you be talking about, Mr. Robinson?
I don't know if Guy or Bill has actually seen the pictures online, but go ahead, you can explain it, Bill.
The cat got my tongue.
You're on the spot now.
Guy's cat has my tongue.
Meow.
How can I say this in a way that's not going to get me in trouble in so many ways?
You can't.
Let's see. Well, iProng has had a staff of 14 people, and at Macworld we did add a somebody new to the family, and that's probably about all I'll say. People are like, what is that guy on drugs? What is he talking about?
All I'll say is...
You do live in Florida.
Simply Google Bill Palmer engagement, and they'll find everything they need to find.
Oh, dear Lord. I could just...
Bill, you knew there was going to be a price for coming on the show.
Well, this is what I love. You throw your own party or whatever. It was our birthday party, and every product reviewer that shows up wants to buy you a drink, and it's like, okay, I guess I'm just getting really, really, really drunk tonight. And then the next morning you get up and you see the pictures on the line, and you're like, I did do that, didn't I?
what is that taste in my mouth?
Hey, the key word here was yes, so, yes. If it had been something other than yes, I'd probably have to quit the industry or something.
There you go. So we're less than a year now away from Macworld Expo 2008.
And what are you doing to prepare?
So, Bill, what do you think they'll announce at Macworld 2008? I'm predicting an iPhone.
I'm predicting an iProng.
An iProng?
Yeah, I don't know it's going to do.
That's after the wedding night.
Right.
I'm predicting Leopard. So,
have you thought about actually setting up a booth at the Macworld Expo, Bill?
Looked into it this year, and I realized, there were like about 75 different companies showing iPod stuff, and we wanted to see all of them. And I thought, if like all of our team is running around and seeing stuff, who's going to be left to run the booth? You know, we're going to have like a, you know,
the happy campers from mymac.com.
Yeah, maybe. Well,
we are actually looking at it next year.
Yeah, well, yeah. Do a joint booth or something. You just have to get enough people out there that everything's covered, because we had, you know, I thought we needed about twice as many people as we had this year just to not run ourselves into the ground.
When it comes
after Robin Williams, yeah, I understand that.
Right.
When it comes to having enough people on the show, I don't think MyMac.com had a problem there this year. We had quite a big staff there.
Mm-hmm. You guys, I was sitting at your table, and you started filling in at what I thought was our table, and we left for a minute and came back, and the MyMac staff had taken the entire table. You know? Like pulling in
and
more
we
chairs.
Were guarding it jealously.
I know. So, yeah, I mean,
don't come near our table. It's our table. Ours.
We're next to the power outlets.
Yeah, that's why we chose the one we did.
Well, you know,
yeah, that's too.
I got to say that you know, during the podcast for the last couple weeks, I had been complaining about having a bad hotel, and hopefully it's not too bad. And I will report, because I did get a couple emails from some of the listeners saying, hey, well, how bad was the hotel that you were really worried about? It wasn't that bad.
No,
it wasn't that bad.
Good.
It wasn't that good.
No, it wasn't that good. Well, you saw it.
Yeah, I did. Fortunately, from inside of a locked cab.
Yeah. Driving by at 80 miles an hour, yeah. I just had to bail out.
That's right. Larry, kick him out!
Don't stop, kid. Go, go, go.
I think I got you beat. When I went out there in September for that Showtime event, boy, was that ever, I mean, almost literally last minute. I just took whatever hotel I could get on Expedia. And I didn't care where it was. I was across the street from that Oriental massage place, and I thought, boy, this is going to be a fun time. And then had to leave town before I got a chance to check out the local scenery. But you should just stay there next year.
We love you a long time, Bill.
Why, at the Oriental massage parlor?
Yeah, or, you know, 10-foot walk. I mean, it was a great neighborhood. I got in about midnight, and I asked the desk guy, where can I go to get a bottle of water? And he said, you don't want to go out this time of night. I said, okay.
That's what and it was funny, because, and I wrote a blog post about this, that I was sitting there the first night at the hotel, and I'm not going to go into how bad my trip was and how I got rerouted and I had to wait for my luggage and all that, but I'm sitting in the hotel pretty late at night, and that's the only place in this hotel that you can get internet access, which is kind of important for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, and this homeless lady comes in, not an old homeless lady, this is a young homeless girl with her hood pulled up. She comes in, sits on the couch across from me, and just kind of lays down. And I was
she hot?
No, but I was
damn.
I was like, really? She's just this. They just walk in and really, that's not right.
No.
That's, you know. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be insensitive.
But did she just get laid off from the Microsoft Zoom division?
Yeah, I wonder. Didn't you have a story about the Zoom and Best Buy?
Yeah. We had a few minutes to kill, so we ran over to literally a few minutes in the whole week. But we went over to that Virgin Megastore just to decompress a little, and they sell iPods there and Zooms both. So I'm talking to the salesman because he thinks I'm like stealing iPod accessories. I'm just trying to see what's in that store. So, you know, I'm saying, how do those Zunes sell? How many Zunes do you sell a day? And he's like, oh, we don't sell one every day.
Every day?
Yeah, right. Every day? Sucker's born every day, but they don't all come into Virgin Megastores. Yeah.
Well, what he won't tell you is that it was the same guy coming in every day to buy one.
Yeah. It was Bill Gates with a mask on every time.
Yeah. Where's this great Zune product that I keep hearing about? We'd really like to buy one. Yeah.
Hey, everyone, look at the great Zune products.
I just tell them it's brown and it squirts.
Well, I want to thank you, Bill.
I think we've all been there.
Yeah, definitely. I want to thank you, Bill, for coming on the show today. And everybody, make sure you go check out iProg.com. If you need iPod information, that is the place to go.
Yep.
I mean, we cover a little bit iPod stuff, you know, a couple cases here and there, and, you know, some articles, how-tos. But, man, if you're a hardcore iPod user, iProg is definitely the site that you want to have linked. So go check that out. And thanks a lot for coming on today, Bill.
Hello, my name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world.
Now, welcome back to the show.
This is Fenestration number 21. I hope you've all recovered from the blizzard of Mac news we were subjected to last week as a result of Macworld. There was so much stuff covered, I find it hard to believe it's only been just over a week since the last keynote. Once the Apple TV has been launched, I will do a podcast where I talk about the Windows video formats and some of the interoperability issues that might be encountered by people wanting to get Windows files and play them on their TV. Similarly, further down the road, there will be plenty to talk about when the iPhone is available, when we start understanding how to move contacts, calendars, and various other synchronization things from Windows systems through Mac systems to the iPhone. Of course, as you might imagine, there was plenty of product announcements and product releases that are applicable directly to Fenestration listeners, and I'll be covering some of these things over the next few podcasts. But for this session, I want to return to a topic I've discussed previously, which is Microsoft Office compatibility. Of course, Microsoft were at Macworld, and they spent some time showing some screenshots and product code of the latest version of Office that's now been officially announced as being Office 2008. Unfortunately, they haven't committed directly to a release date for this product yet, but it is looking like it's going to be at least the second quarter of this year, so we're looking April at the absolute earliest. This is very disappointing. Assuming they do get it out the door in time for May, that will have been nearly 18 months since the first Intel Macs hit the shelves. And in the meantime, we've been stuck with using Office 2004 for Mac, which on Intel Macs doesn't actually run that well. It runs, it works via Rosetta, which means it's slow and it takes a lot of memory. I think the fact that it will have taken them 18 months to actually hit the Intel platform with some Intel native code or universal binary code again indicates something I've talked about previously on Fenestration, which is the level of resources that Microsoft is committing to Macintosh development at the moment. There was nothing new from Microsoft on the OpenXML formats that they employ in Office 2007 for Windows and providing converters for the Macintosh. They stuck to their line that they will be able to deliver betas of these by March this year, with the actual final release of the converters available a couple of months after Office 2008 for Mac ships. Now, I mentioned previously that other companies had come forward with some form of conversion for these OpenXML files, and I'm going to talk a little about those today. The first product is from a company called Panergy Software, and is called simply DocX Converter. The product's quite simple. You simply install it, run it, and drag a DocX file, that's a file from Word 2007, directly into the application, and it saves it out into the same place as an RTF file. I tested this using a standard company document that I created during work today. This was a 7 or 8 page proposal using our standard Microsoft Word template with our headers and our company address in the footers and various pagination and styles that suit our company. I saved this document from Office 2007 as a DocX file, and having converted it to an RTF using DocX Converter, I opened it up in Word 2004 for Mac, and I was reasonably impressed. It made quite a good fist of converting the document. There were a couple of extra page breaks inserted, so I had a couple of blank pages, but generally the document wasn't a million miles away from what it looked like on Office 2007. It was certainly legible, and if I'd have had to reformat it so I could work with it on the Macintosh, I probably could have done that relatively quickly. Of course, your mileage may vary. DocX Converter is available as a demo download. The demo version available from the website will actually convert 20 documents before it forces you to buy it, so there's a good opportunity to try it and see how it works for you. Confusingly, there is another service called DocX Converter, only with a hyphen between the DocX and the Converter. What this one does is it's an online service that takes documents and converts them into HTML renderings. The idea behind this is that the documents should look more closely like they did originally in the Office 2007 version. You can either send the document up to them off their website, or they can give you a widget that will do the same thing. You can drag your DocX document onto the widget, and it will send it up to the website, convert it, and save it back to your computer. Unfortunately, using the same standard test document that I mentioned before, I wasn't able to get this program to run on my Mac. I tried various different ways, using both the widget and the website, and each time I got an error saying that the document couldn't be converted. However, the service is free, so you can try it with your own documents as much as you might like. Now, both of these solutions only work with Word files, As far as I'm aware, there is nothing currently that can convert open XML versions of Excel and PowerPoint documents from Office 2007 into anything that can be run on a Mac. Now, it's early days for Office 2007. I've loaded it into my parallel session because I'm pretty sure that in my particular job, where I receive a lot of documents from a lot of people, at some point somebody's going to send me an Office 2007 document. And besides which, for all I've complained about the open XML formats, Office 2007 is actually a really nice product. The interface enhancements that they've made with the ribbon make it a much easier to use than Office 2004 or Office 2003 on the Windows side. What's disappointing about these open XML formats that Microsoft are now using in Office 2007 is twofold. First of all, despite them allegedly being open, apparently the document structure and the schema that makes up the XML file has only recently been published. This means that people are behind the curve in terms of producing effective converters for these documents. Secondly, it's not actually all that intuitive within Office 2007 how to turn the feature on that ensures that documents are always saved using the older formats and therefore are more compatible. Microsoft's current recommendation for dealing with this is to ask the people who send you documents to ensure that they're in the older format that Office 2004 can read. The Mac Business Unit even say that this is exactly what they've had to do while the rest of Microsoft has already migrated to Office 2007. I'm not going to start ranting again about how lame I think that is. What I will offer you is my own personal recommendation. Having a full copy of Parallels on my Intel Mac, and having Office 2007 running under that copy of Parallels, and using coherence mode in Parallels, meaning that I can run Office 2007 and it looks just like a OS X application on my desktop, it doesn't appear to be running in a different environment. My recommendation, if you're an Intel Mac user, is to do what I did this afternoon, which is to uninstall Office 2004 and rely purely on the Windows version of Office 2007, if that is available to you. Obviously, PowerPC users are in a far better position in my view, because they can maintain Office 2004 for Mac, and it runs at a decent clip. However, the price they pay for that performance advantage over an Intel Mac user is that they may receive documents created in Office 2007 that they can't read directly, that they can't edit directly, and they may not be able to open at all.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in, and be sure to subscribe.
That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Hello, Robert Hazelrig here with another Speed E review. And as part of my never-ending quest to help you protect your iPod, I have two products this week. One is called the Invisible Shield from Shield Zone, and they can be found at shieldzone.com. Shield Zone produces these clear plastic stickers that actually almost work like a laminate on top of your iPod. They're very cool. For as little as $10, you can get a shield, an invisible shield to protect your screen or your click wheel. They also have, for $20 or $25, depending on which iPod you have, a full body shield. The way this thing works is you spray a clear liquid that they supply to you onto the sticky side of the plastic laminate. You stick it on top of your iPod, squeegee out the bubbles, and wait approximately 24 hours is recommended. I didn't wait that long, and it seemed to have worked fine. I've been using my shield for about 45 days, and I've put it through its paces, and so far, I haven't even seen the plastic or the rubber laminate get scratched at all. I've been using the iPod, mostly in my backpack when I travel, with some keys and some other things in there, and my iPod has survived thanks to the Shield Zone. I've got no scratches whatsoever, and I'm very happy with it. The Shield Zone is made from a very durable plastic. They claim that it's the same type of material that's used to protect helicopter blades. So I found that a little interesting. The other thing that is neat to know about the Invisible Shield is they make the shields for all kinds of things, not just your iPod. So if you want to put a shield on your cell phone or your PSP, they even have one for the Nintendo DS Lite. Okay, next up is the PodSafe from a company called Secure-It. And they can be found at www.secure-it.com. So secure-it. Secure-It makes the PodSafe. The PodSafe is a combination lock that encases your iPod and allows you to lock your iPod and keep it secure. The PodSafe is about the same size as any normal iPod case. It has access holes so you can see the screen and access the click wheel. Now, the product retails for $29.95, and overall, I like the PodSafe. However, I did note that there were two issues that I had. One issue with each different version, because there's a slight variation between the one for the video iPod and the one for the Nano. The one for the video iPod, when your video iPod is encased into the lock or the PodSafe, you don't have access to the docking station, the dock. Where the combination lock is, it actually sits over top of or underneath the bottom of the iPod itself, so you cannot access the dock. What this means is, when I was at work and had my iPod locked to my G5 so nobody would steal it, I couldn't charge it or synchronize it or, you know, really make it functional. I suppose that the PodSafe in this case would be handy if I had some other thing that I needed to lock it to while I was traveling. But when it came to practical uses in my office, it fell a little short. The PodSafe for Nano, however, seems to be a little bit more functional. You do still have, because there is a hole at the bottom of the PodSafe, you do still have access to the dock and the headphone jacks. However, you don't have access to the lock mechanism at the top of the iPod. Now, I didn't find that to be particularly inconvenient. However, it might be inconvenient for some individuals, and I felt that I should mention it in my review. I would hope that the next time Secure-It produces a new PodSafe for the iPods, that they would put the combination lock on the side of the iPod. That way you would have full and complete control of all of the elements of your iPod at all times. I don't think that it would be terribly cumbersome to have the lock mechanism on the side. Might not look as attractive, but it would work better. Well, that's it for me this week. It's been Robert Hazelrig with a speedy review. As always, thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Dan Rodriguez from Adrian, Michigan. I'm sure you guys are Mac World out. I know I am. But I just wanted to quickly give my feedback on the whole scenario. And wanted you guys to know, first of all, you did a great job covering the Macworld show. Congratulations. Here's quickly my feedback on the whole event. I feel personally, as a Mac user, I feel that there wasn't anything really talked about as far as with Mac stuff. I mean, you know, the whole thing was about the iPhone. I think it's incredible. I think the iPhone is an incredible device, and it's going to knock the socks off anything else out there when it comes out. And I hope that the iPhone, the roadmap for the iPhone with the Mac OS X platform and the touch screen controls and all that stuff, all that nice stuff, I hope it does translate and get to the next generation iPod. Because honestly, after seeing the iPhone, the iPod now looks dated, and it's been dated for a while. So, and I really was, you know, after all the hype and everything, all the high of watching the iPhone and being excited about it, kind of feel down because iWork was not announced. iWork 07, iLife 07 wasn't announced. I mean, there wasn't even made a mention about any Leopard features, things like that, things that Mac fans really were hoping that Steve would talk about, was totally disregarded. And I think it was kind of weird too that he didn't even announce the Airport Extreme, but I think Steve was really pretty excited about showing the world the iPhone. And that's basically it. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Recently at MyMac.com, we did a survey of iPod and iTunes books. And I'm happy to say that one of the co-authors of the book that came in with the highest score is here at the other line. And we'd like to welcome Tony to our Book Bites Live podcast. But first, we need to know how you pronounce your name. It's spelled B-O-V-E. And Tony, how do you pronounce your last name?
Well, it's pronounced Beauvais.
Beauvais. So Tony Beauvais and Cheryl Rhodes are the co-authors of iPod and iTunes for Dummies, fourth edition. And the price in the United States is $22, Canada $26, and £15 in the United Kingdom from Dummies Press. We will have the links on our show notes. Who did what on your co-authored book, Tony? Did you and Cheryl work together, or were you independently assembling all this data?
Well, basically, I'm the writer, and she performs quite a bit of research. She worked on the first edition, and I've been updating it ever since.
Okie dokie. Well, obviously, in iTunes, there's lots of things we can learn from you, since you're the expert, and people do not really understand how the equalizer works. So which equalizer settings do you, Tony, prefer in iTunes on your computer and also on your iPod?
Well, I look at equalizer as simply a way of fine-tuning the sound for the speakers. So I pick an equalizer setting that would work well with the speakers I'm playing on. And for that reason, I basically never do any kind of equalizing on the way into the computer. The sounds are the way they are. I use iTunes equalizer and the iPod equalizer to fine-tune it for tiny speakers, or in the iPod, in the case of the iPod, I use it in the car a lot. So there I have an EQ for getting very good highs and bass response.
Okay, great, because I do urge our listeners to play around with that equalizer. It's really a very good friend, and it's just waiting there to help you out.
Well, one cool thing you can do is if a particular song, if you really like to set the EQ settings for that song and you want that to be persistent, then you do use the equalizer settings in iTunes and set it specifically for that song so that when you bring it into the iPod, you can make use of those settings.
Oh, I get it. Speaking of bringing music into the iPod, do you recommend using the default auto sync between the iPod and the computer, or to manage your song library manually?
Well, to tell you the truth, I have such a large library that no iPod, there isn't a model iPod yet that can hold everything. So up until that time, before my library got so big, the rule of thumb for me was simply that if the iPod can hold everything, then auto-sync is the way to go. It really didn't matter to me whether there were songs on the iPod that I never played. It was just so convenient and so simple to use that I wanted to put everything on there. Now we have photos, we have videos, we have podcasts, we have so much more material, and my library is so huge that I have to use manual updating. Actually, it's possible. For a while there, I used a combination of playlist updating and updating using the check mark to decide which songs to do and not do, but basically unchecking those very large jams by some bands that take over half an hour, just so that I can fit the rest of the library into my iPod. Nowadays, I basically continue to fill up my iPod with new stuff and delete old stuff manually so that I can keep a constant full iPod going. I have other models, so I actually have divided some of the music in my collection to different model iPods. And I don't really see a great solution to this until the iPods have more capacity, or until iTunes is made better so that it would manage multiple libraries better.
Well, what's at the top of Tony's wish list for the next major releases of iTunes?
Well, actually, that is on the top of my list. A much more convenient, intuitive method of managing multiple music libraries on hard drives, of your own hard drives. If you have several hard drives connected, and you want to. Right now, iTunes does a very good job of backing things up. I would like a way to automatically sync portions of my library and not the entire library without having to define playlists. And I would also really like to be able to put in more specific liner notes type information, such as the performing musicians on a particular song, and then be able to search those fields so that, for example, I can find everything that, say, Pete Sears ever played on. Not just the albums by him or by the bands that he was in, but since he was such an incredible session musician, he played with all different people. I'd like to be able to have that information in hand. And, of course, I'd like the Grace Notes database to be updated to have that kind of information. So,
okay. Well, that's certainly a realistic wish list, and with a bit of luck, that will appear fairly soon. Well, you mentioned podcasts earlier, and, of course, this is the Book Bites Live on MyMac.com podcast. What podcasts do you listen to, Tony?
Well, I listen to a variety of them when I have the time. I particularly like this old-timey bluegrass one. I forget the name of it. I don't have it in front of me on the screen, but there are just so many. I do two podcasts of my own. Both of them are music podcasts. One is dedicated to the Flying Other Brothers, which is the band I'm in. The Flying Other Brothers, and that podcast features live shows. We have a lot of we have some interesting people in the band, including I mentioned Pete Sears, also D.E. Smith. These podcasts are, not on a regular schedule, but I try and get them. I try to do them. I've done several so far. I try to do them every month. The Rockyman podcast combines music from the past, from the Smithsonian Institute, and from old-timey Americana music, combined with some California musicians who play that style of music. And I've got several podcasts of that up. And the goal with the Rockyman ones is to show the connection between old-time music and today's rock music, sort of uncover the roots of rock.
Well, I was listening to that. I must admit it was pretty intriguing to me because it definitely interests me personally. And I noticed that's all linked from your own personal website. That's spelled TonyBove, TonyBove.com. And all those links are right there staring you right in the face when you go to TonyBove.com. Well, let's ask you the final zinger question. Aside from the acclaimed iPhone, what was the best new item that you saw at last week's Macworld Expo?
Well, the best new item, that would be hard to pin down. I was pretty jazzed by the Supercam tapeless digital movie camera. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah, that booth, boy, that joint was jumping.
That joint was jumping. And I really like all of the different audio systems for putting an iPod in your car. There's so many different varieties, I just thought they were all pretty cool to look at. I particularly want to get, the iMuffs, the wireless headphones and that work with Bluetooth.
What's that name of that? The i what?
It's called iMuffs, as in earmuffs.
Oh, iMuffs.
Yeah. They've got, that's pretty cool. We don't have Bluetooth in the current iPods, and that gives you that capability, so you don't have to have those wires dangling from your ears.
Yes, we listened to a couple of different Bluetooth headsets while we were there.
There were lots of different headsets, all different styles. I think that was very cool to see all these accessories. And it's almost as much as an iPod show as it is a Macintosh show.
Absolutely. Well, we want to urge our readers and listeners to pay attention to iPod and iTunes for Dummies, 4th edition, by Tony Bove and Cheryl Rhodes. Got the highest rating on our recent survey of iPod and iTunes books at MyMac.com. And thank you so much, Tony Bove, for joining us on the MyMac.com Book Bites Live podcast.
Well, thank you.
Is there a dinosaur in your life? A big, slow computer that eats up space? Remember what happened to the dinosaurs? They all got sick with viruses and worms. Dump the dinosaur and get a Mac. The Mac Mini is fast, nimble, no bigger than a lunchbox, and you can go wireless without a phone jack in sight. Macs aren't immune from viruses, but they are much less likely to catch them. Find out why at Small Dog Electronics in Waitsfield and on the web at smalldog.com.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.